Welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. You know, it's interesting how every year we have this budget and there's a big hype before it, and then the night of the budget everybody sits up, or at least I do anyway, sits up and listens to every word that's said and tries to work out what's going on as a result of that. But one of the things that's actually interesting is that just because we've had a budget and we've said this is what's going to happen doesn't necessarily mean that that's what happens. It still has to get through Parliament. It still has to be approved. And in this case, a lot of the changes that came through in May, they're scheduled for after the election, which, you know, they may or may not get in. So I thought, you know, let's have a little talk about what the budget actually did, and if all of the predictions out of the budget come to pass, what it actually means for us as property investors, because that's really what we're interested in. What's it going to do to the markets? What's it going to do to jobs and growth? Seems to be the big slogan this time. So I thought what the best way to really give a really great analysis is to talk to the best, in my opinion, economist in Australia. Now, his name is Jason Anderson. For those of you who have been around, around the traps with me for some time, you'll know who I'm talking about. And, you know, Jason has been speaking on stage at the I Love Real Estate community events for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years now. And every year he comes out and he makes predictions. And he makes predictions about what's going to happen in the market and how he sees things happening from a property perspective. And do you know, in the last 6, 7, 8 years or whatever it has been, he has never been wrong. Now, that's pretty cool for an economist to come out, first of all, and give an opinion on what's going to happen. And then over all of that time, to have never been wrong. I tell you what, you guys are in for an absolute thrill listening to this podcast. Here he is. I want to introduce him, the man himself, the best economist in Australia, Mr. Jason Anderson. Hello, Jason. How are you?
Well, after that introduction, I'm feeling even better. But yes, I'm pretty well today. How are you?
Very good. This must be a pretty busy time for you.
Look, it probably is more so because of the rate cut that we had on Tuesday. As much as the budget, the two are related, of course. You know, part of what's going on at the moment is that the federal government is sticking to its guns and trying to cut back on spending and not lose its credit rating. And as a result, we are needing to get more rate cuts in order to get some flow in, I'd say continuing in the areas that we have seen over the last year or two.
Do you think that the Reserve Bank had any inkling as to what was in the budget?
I think they would have had a sense that if there'd been substantial policy statements, they would well and truly have been out before the middle of Tuesday. That seems to be the way it works these days.
Mm. Okay, so let's talk about those things. First of all, the rate cut and what that means for the property market. What are your opinions?
Yes, I think there was question being raised about whether that would be passed on.
That's always the problem.
From my personal point of view, I did get a notification that that rate cut was going to be passed on. So I think at the moment, some of the concerns about the liquidity of the banks doesn't seem to be coming to pass. If anything, they're focusing more of their time and attention on foreign investors, but we might talk about that more later. I think in terms of the rate cut, hopefully what we see is that particularly for first home buyers, that maybe there's a view of this is as good as it can get, and I'm going to act now. They're the part of the market that's been softest. still over the last couple of years, and we've seen some slowing of growth in terms of residential property and the areas where we're going to see the next degree of pickup will be in the areas that are led by first home buyers.
See, the low activity, I suppose, from a property perspective has mainly been led by Sydney, though.
In terms of first home buyers?
No, I mean, you know, Sydney's market's obviously cooled. And
Yes.
And then that's had the biggest impact on the slowing of the residential market overall.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at Brisbane, actually, last year was the better year for quite a long time. The same is true of the Gold Coast and Sunshine Coast and Cairns as well. And Melbourne's still doing quite well. So, yeah, if you look at the areas where things have come off the boil, it's definitely been Sydney.
Do you think that the RBA is very Sydney-centric?
I don't think so. I think that the concern is more about the indicators that we've got in terms of business investment, which is still looking very weak, and I think we're still not getting as much carry through in terms of household spending as what when we talk about retail sales. There's more scope for that to be showing better growth at this stage of the cycle. So the overall situation is obviously one where inflation is virtually at zero. You know, consumer prices overall at a standstill, and I think we've got plenty of time to get some more growth going in some parts of the economy, but more on the direct household side. The areas that have been doing better still have been areas on the export services, so more from the tourism side and from international students.
Do you think that the deflation figures for the first time in a long time coming out just before the RBA meeting had any impact on, or was the major trigger for the rate cut?
I think it has to have been because, there was, if you look at the core readings in terms of inflation, we'd been holding up, closer to 2% than 2.5%. And the core figures take out things like some of the petrol price cuts that we had in March quarter, which was a contributor to the overall prices coming down. But in the most recent reading, even the core levels for inflation dropped below 2%. And I think that's the trigger I think that they were waiting for to act on in terms of putting through another rate cut.
So your emphasis there is on the first home buyers. You think that's where the next, surge in the property market's going to come from. So we're talking about the lower cost, perhaps, areas on the fringes of the city. Is that what you're predicting?
Definitely. I think when we look at even a city like Melbourne, where the overall readings have been quite good, fringe areas of the city, very weak growth to flat. So there's been this, considerable divergence. In Melbourne, the same is true of Brisbane. Perth, a little bit of a different kettle of fish. But if we look outside of Sydney on the east coast, Melbourne and Brisbane, the fringe areas are where The market has been still quite soft despite the rate cuts that we've had, and we need that trigger in terms of first home buyers in order for those parts of the market to pick up. And as a consequence of that, those are the areas where if we're starting to see a decline coming through in terms of apartment construction, then first home buyers can help be part of a, I wouldn't say recovery, they've been tracking reasonably well, but another spurt in terms of detached house construction. And so there's a part of the economy there I think the Reserve Bank is focused on.
So the the first home buyers, if they really wanted to spur that side of the market along, the federal government probably should have come in with a better deal for a first home buyer with the first homeowners grant.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. And it's almost a question, it's almost an observation of been there, done that.
Been there, done that, and it worked.
Indeed. And I think when the jury's out a bit from the point of view of some commentators as to whether or not an overall first home buyer's grant, i.e. one that's available for established properties and new properties, is desirable, but maybe all it does is push up prices. I've never really subscribed to that argument. First home buyers are a small segment of the market, so I don't think they have that much power in terms of changing prices. But in terms of the new houses, it would have been a reasonable target to have seen come through in the budget. Mm-hmm. But I think the jury from the overall economic community is that we don't want grants of that type for first-time buyers. Certainly what we want more of is infrastructure. So infrastructure becomes in particular, obviously, government spending in terms of road and rail becomes a focal point now.
So let's talk about that, because there was a number of announcements regarding, you know, certain projects and things. What impact do you think that's going to have?
Well, the question is still how are we going to fund that? So is it going to be wholly debt? Is it going to be through the creation of some incentives for superannuation funds to invest in infrastructure? And, there's still some, we saw in the budget, some desire, I think, to take away some of the concessions for the highest end of the income earners in terms of super funds. And maybe some of that could go into support for infrastructure. But the fact that we're still having that debate suggests that there isn't really a resolution as to how that's going to be funded in either from the government's point of view. And that suggests that we go back to the path of not perhaps a public-private partnerships, but certainly maybe what the New South Wales government is doing in cases, which is where they're committing to build the asset, which is, say, a WestConnex motorway. They'll observe the traffic in the first year or two. That will set what the revenues are, and then they'll seek to sell it. Whereas in the past, that risk has been tended to be pushed into the private side. So there are avenues for Australia to do a better job at getting some of those infrastructure projects going, but to date, still very limited action, I think, on that score, other than at the state government level, where you've got New South Wales doing very well because of its ability to have got through Parliament the sale or the long-term lease of electricity.
Okay, so you were talking about, you know, the fringe areas and things like that, and the first home buyers really not having a huge impact, but still an impact in some areas. So from a property perspective, how do you see the budget affecting house prices? How do you see it affecting you know, investment generally? You know, there's been some changes there with respect to the superannuation and the like. So, you know, what's your take on all of that?
Well, and, you know, a plan for a gradual decrease in company tax as well.
Well, that's right.
And so I think whatever changes we've seen, they're not going to take much effect in the short term. I think that we're not we're certainly not seeing a big infrastructure-led spending program, and that's what the stock market would love to see, because then, you know, we've got a whole lot of listed companies that have exposure to construction and to financing and etc. And so it leaves just the share market a bit without a much of a fiscal stimulus. I think that pushes, by implication, we go back to looking at interest rates still. And even though some people had taken that off the table as being, you know, a factor for the housing market, it clearly still is. And I think it's that indirect effect where this is a positive for housing over the course of this year and into next year, and in particular if we can see some of the fixed rates come down and you know, stay very low, because there's an acceptance that we're in a low interest rate world for the foreseeable future, like virtually every other country in the world. That's where we can get some action happening. That's where the banks can target your first home buyers with and compete for first home buyers with low interest rates. And I think that's got to be the strategy now coming out of the banks over the next year or two. And, you know, that's why I'm focusing on that particular element of the market.
So, you know, when you look at the 5-minute guide, I guess, of what's actually happening, you reckon that the budget really is like a ho-hum budget and really doesn't have a huge impact on property, but the interest rate is more the telling factor, and of course that has a positive impact.
Yes, that's right. And until we get, you know, there are some important numbers that are deeply embedded within the budget, which are things like our programs for immigration. There was no change again to the target for permanent immigration. It might have been a bold move to have seen an increase in the target, given, you know, we've got still a fairly moderate housing, moderate jobs market. But I think the other side where it has effects is through things like the higher education funding. Again, there's been rumblings for some time about some policy change there, but none that actually came through in the budget. So it's not to say that the budget can't have impacts. It's just that I think that days of trying to have all of those condensed into one big group of announcements are over, and that they prefer to, the governments prefer to stretch them out and get more value from them over time. And moreover, we do have a pretty unusual political environment at the moment, and every prospect that we will have an election as early as the start of July. So I wonder if it was, you know, diffused a bit by that, that it was some of the policy announcements that we might have had during a budget come through more now in the lead up to an election.
You talked there about foreign investment and immigration and student numbers and things like that, 457 visas, etc. What impact do you think ongoing the budget has had on any of that, or the fact that there have been no changes? It's a good thing. What's your summary take there?
If we take the employment figures at face value, then we've had very strong jobs growth. I mean, this is an environment where we should be trying to set up the economy in terms of immigration, trying to set up the situation for where we are going to be in 3 to 5 years' time. And part of the reason the unemployment rate's low is that we're going to get more and more people reaching retirement age. And we need the skilled workers to come in and now and provide some offset to that. That's not happening. When you look at the permanent migrant intake, there's some more interesting stuff going on, I think, when it comes to student visas. And The student numbers overall have rebounded, and that's provided some offset to lower numbers in terms of the temporary workers, the 457 visas. And I think there's going to be much more of a focus on trying to get skilled workers in, but perhaps not directly, not straight away entering the job force, because then they'd be perceived as taking away Australian jobs. But if they come in as overseas students and study here for a couple of years and then qualify for permanent residency, then it's a different perception effect. And I think that's where there was a statement prior to the budget talking about the importance of international education. And I think that would be politically a kind of smart way of getting more immigration without it, being seen to come at the cost of jobs for Australian workers.
Hmm. Well, that's really what's been happening. It's been the epidemic for some time that student visas are issued. Students come over and then they apply for their application to stay, etc.
Well, it has, but only 10 to 15% of them do stay. Most of them return home. And I think what we're looking for are people that are more mature, people maybe who are partway through a PhD who have a skill set that we really want. And so it becomes a lot more selective in terms of the kinds of people that we're bringing into the country.
The superannuation changes in the budget, albeit them moderate, what do you think there? Is it going to have any impact on property?
Well, I don't think so. I think if we take the changes as a whole, and there's maybe a little bit more taxation on some of the higher income earners. I think they're already pretty active in residential property. So at the margin, it's probably a slight positive in terms of residential property. But it's a fairly, you know, moderate change, I think, overall.
The whole budget was a very moderate change. I mean, you know, we had the discussion leading in about whether negative gearing was going to be affected. And I've recently read some figures on who's actually investing, sectors of the markets and things that are actually investing in negative gearing. And they're pretty widespread. I mean, I don't approve of negative gearing, but it would have had a major impact had it been taken away on the property market.
Yes, and you know, there's clearly a line in the sand now, because the federal government decided not to make any changes and not to go down that path at all. So we've got a starker difference, obviously, than perhaps what we might have thought we were at a few months ago. And so I've become part of the a pretty key part of the debate in the lead up to the election, and it wouldn't surprise me if we see the odd additional study come out trying to push the argument one way or another. But I think its effects are not as strong as what I think people, you know, might give credence to it on the surface. I think what we get back in terms of capital gains tax is perhaps a more, you know, a interesting question as to whether or not there should be a capital gains tax concession.
If negative gearing was taken away.
So that's there's some trade-offs there.
I mean, Labor's still fairly strong on the fact that they don't like negative gearing.
Yes.
So do you think it could become, you know, the crunch issue of who you vote for, and therefore whether a negative gearing is going to stay or not?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is some chance of that happening, because in the absence of other policy issues, it is a, you know, it's the kind of one sentence factor that perhaps could get some traction. But I don't know whether it really has that much appeal to a lot of people, maybe because they don't understand it very well. And you know, there might be a counter reaction to it, which is, well, it's just it's a distraction from what the government really should be trying to do, which is tell us which sectors of the economy they really want to get job creation going, as opposed to playing around with the tax system.
Well, the whole slogan of the budget was, you know, jobs and growth. We heard it, can't remember how many times, 50 or 60 throughout the whole speech. Do you think that the objectives have been achieved for that? Do you think we're going to see more jobs generally created around Australia, and therefore more taxpayers, and therefore you know, more money to go into property, to rent and to buy?
In terms of the budget, I don't think it will have much effect at all, certainly relative to the potential of what can come from another interest rate cut. Which is, you know, to a degree, it's a pity, because we still have some key levers at our disposal. We should be having a debate about permanent migrant intake, and which areas of the country we've got skill shortages are. There are plenty of them. Even though we've got, you know, fairly, what would you say, moderate unemployment, there are some parts of the country where it's extremely hard to find skilled workers, and So we've got that issue to be dealt with a bit more squarely, but politically it's that's a very unpalatable topic.
So it's a hot potato.
A hot potato, and so this is the problem, is that we need to find a way to break this connection that we've got, where we have some really important policy issues that we should start to take some action with, but maybe rather than setting them up as, you know, in totality, setting them up as such a huge range of things that we do in any one area, like, for example, the infrastructure statements that come out, which, you know, go through all of the areas of infrastructure where we need more investment, is to actually say, well, we can't do all of them, but we might do, you know, at least the top three. The top three that we're going to get on with this, and that at least provides a focus, so that rather than being just a general topic, it becomes a reality topic for the community, because otherwise it's just it comes in one ear and goes out the other. I think if you look at the success the current New South Wales government is having, is their, you know, their ability to have said, well, we will sell these assets, we will take that money, and we will reinvest it in infrastructure. And for them to actually be doing that is providing a platform for the property market in terms of development, which is working extremely well.
So the announcements for the major infrastructure and things, I mean, they're not for a while to come yet, but do you think you're going to see more property price increases in and around the peripheral areas of that infrastructure?
Yeah, I think there are some... I'm not always a fan of drawing that connection, but I think at this point in time... there are some cases where you could find that connection. You know, for example, in North Melbourne, we have, when I say North Melbourne, I mean north of Melbourne, up in Craigieburn, where we have this goal for more rail infrastructure, but whether it's going to be the underground circuit or whether it's going to be the above ground circuit, that's the area where the workers are living, and so Melbourne's been lacking in a major infrastructure project for some time, and if we can come through with one or the other of those, then that would be, I think, a substantial boost to that area of fringe Melbourne property market. I mean, the Gold Coast is kicking along very well, but I think that's probably more to do with tourism than as much as it is to do with infrastructure work that's happening before the Commonwealth Games at this point. Mm. And so road projects are, you know, the effects of them tend to get spread across the economy. There are some differences, though, where you get a whole lot of road projects in a small space, such as what is happening in Western Sydney at the moment. That's providing a pipeline of work that will extend, you know, 3-4 years, and that I think provides some confidence on the score of workers who, and particularly first home buyers, to say, well, you know, jobs market's looking good here. I'm finding I've got lots of places where I can go and find employment. So now's the time. I'm going to buy. And so what you want is in any one city for that to happen. Adelaide is an interesting one on that score because it has quite a few major roads that need upgrading. We've seen the announcement in terms of the subs. And I think inner city Adelaide has been an under, it's been overlooked as a destination for a property investment for some time, and it's one that I would definitely put on your list if you're looking at from a yield point of view and from a capital gains point of view. I think it rates very well.
Hmm. Well, you and I have been talking about that for some time too. Okay, so anything else you'd like to kind of wrap up on predictions as to how you see things going? Any other impacts that you think either the rate cut or the budgets actually have before we finish off the podcast?
In terms of rate cuts, keep an eye on special deals for first-time buyers on fixed-term rates. That's where we're going to... I think see a marketing push from the banks. I think they are progressively backing away from support for foreign investment or foreign investors seeking mortgages. We saw some statements by Westpac during the week, and that does not augur well at all well for the major apartment projects. So. It's a time, I think, to look at standard house and land in the fringes. I think that the interest rate policy can work in that favour by creating that support for first-home buyers. And so we've got a bit of a change of guard in coming through. Over the last couple of years, it's all been about big apartments and foreign investors, and I think we can go back to the traditional terrain of what a first home buyer is doing.
Mm. And you think you'll see a little bit of a slump in that inner city apartment market?
Well, I think it's been on the cards for some time. If we're talking about Melbourne, but certainly Brisbane, there's a lot of apprehension as well. And I think if the banks are saying that we're going to stop, providing mortgage backing for foreign investors, in apartments, then that tells you something pretty major is in the works in terms of how quickly that those pre-commencement sales could decrease.
Mm. Mm. Okay, Jason. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I know it's a very, very busy time for you. You've got all the big companies around Australia and governments, etc., wanting to hear your opinion on all sorts of things. So we really, really, really do appreciate your time coming on and talking to the I Love Real Estate community. And thanks once again, and I'll have you up on stage very soon, I think.
It's a pleasure. Always great to have a chat with you.
Okay, thanks so much, Jason.
All right.
Bye for now. And that's it from us from iloverealestate.tv. Remember to subscribe to iTunes, and you can get the podcast coming through on a regular basis to you. We're trying to do them at least every week for you. And there's updates there on all sorts of things. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon. Bye for now.